Hello, party people. Welcome to the third episode of Pull Up a Seat. I'm Alex Starr, and I have a sweet episode in store for you guys today. First off, though, I wanted to give a big heartfelt thank you to everybody out there who has texted me, Facebook messaged me, sent me smoke signals, and otherwise contacted me, letting me know that they've listened to the show and they've shared it. And that they've been inspired by it. It's just that I've been eternally grateful for all my friends out there. And it really means a lot to me. So just wanted to say that. And if you have any comments or suggestions how much this podcast sucks or how it's the best thing you've ever listened to, send it over to pullupaseat@alexstarr.com. And we have a really interesting show. It's Mira Joshi and Eric Mann, and I met them in Peru at a Spanish school this past winter when I was traveling around down there in South America, and they were working on a microfinance film involving local Peruvians, and it kind of shifted into another film, and it's DeLaTierraFilm.com. It is a documentary. And the way that she described it to me is three subjects interviewed are all very different, yet share core values expressed in different ways. These are the values we can all relate to, regardless of language, race, or religion. They are part of what makes us human. Okay, so it's a shaman, a farmer, and an Afro-Peruvian family connected by the earth, God, and music. Okay, it's incredible stuff. They were amazing people. They are amazing people. They're still around. And they're working on this film. So check it out. It's really cool. They're just interesting people doing interesting things. That's DeLaTierraFilm.com. They got a little 30-second teaser. I'll post all the information on the info section of this podcast. Just do yourself a favor. Check it out. It's 30 seconds. And I think you really enjoy it. And last little bit of business is I need some more reviews on iTunes. Apparently it's important to get ratings. So the first five people who leave me a written review on the podcast, I'm going to randomly select, and I haven't decided how I'm going to do that yet, but I will randomly select one person to receive decadent, indulgent, aphrodisiac chocolate-covered strawberries. You can share them with yourself. You can share them with your significant other. You can give them to your dog. You can give them to your neighbor if you wanted, and start a connection with a neighbor you never talked to. But of course, they're going to love chocolate-covered strawberries. And then you guys fall hopelessly in love, and you completely forget about anything in life that ails you because you are intertwined soul to soul with this person that you met by giving them chocolate-covered strawberries by writing a review on iTunes. That'd be sweet. So, that'd be a big favor to me. And besides that, enjoy the show, and I will see you guys on the other side. Ciao.
Welcome to Pull Up a Seat with your host, Alex Starr.
I'm here with Eric Mann.
Yes.
And Mira Joshi. I said it right?
Yep.
Cool. And we're in Lima. And thanks a lot for coming and talking.
No problem.
On the podcast.
No problem.
You guys seem like really genuine people. So I was like, you guys were saying all the stuff you're doing. I was like, I have to get you guys to talk about all the interesting things.
So the con is working.
Yeah, you guys are going to be like, all right, cool. Now we can pitch our
our
pharmaceutical
exactly
products to you on this podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've just been practicing in the mirror for 45 days. Remember, this is what you say. You don't fuck this up. Are we supposed to, like, swear and things like that?
Anything you want. Oh, yeah. It's, you know, it's the internet. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
That's no, the more open and the more swearing, the better, I think.
Okay. Yeah. That sounds fine.
Yeah. If you're gonna, if you're gonna swear in real life, fucking shit, you better fucking do it.
Okay, that sounds good.
So you guys are talking about, you guys were on a farm, because I remember I was mentioning woofing.
Yeah.
And you guys were there to do a documentary for your website, Mira. But you're doing a documentary on microfinance, is that it? Yeah. I've had a large piece go sour at this point. So,
what should we begin?
Tell me, what's up with it? Yeah.
So, we first came to Peru with this idea of making a microfinance.
And you're from?
I'm from Australia.
From Australia, but you have a New Zealand citizenship.
Yeah.
Okay, then you're from San Francisco. You live in New York.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. So we're like contacting all these microfinance agencies and kind of getting some bites back, but then we would just talk to people about what we're doing, and the very first lead that we got was in a restaurant in Cusco called Shaman Vegan, and we met a guy at a communal table, and he was just like, what are you guys doing in Peru? And we said, we're here to make a documentary about farmers and microfinance, and he was like, well, this is perfect, because my grandparents run a farm, so like to invite you.
Yeah.
That's always how it works.
Huh? Yeah. So we've been like working a lot in the United States.
Is this a project that both of you like in, just kind of started together?
It has a long, murky story of, before I met Mira, I wanted to like travel somewhere to like South America or whatever. And, I wanted to, I guess, do docs maybe, but I wasn't really sure because I've more done like narrative things. I was working a lot and getting like really sick and just wanted to like get out of New York. I think I was just very uncomfortable with lifestyle. And I liked kind of the more like Indiana Jones-esque style where you just like kind of live and like work in a city and then you kind of like disappear for a little while and then come back. I had a vague idea, a very vague idea, and then I met Mira in the summer. Yeah. And she came with her prospectus and everything. Yeah. But we met at a party and then we started dating after like four months. I have no idea, but so it's kind of like because Mira, you know, as her visa was ending, and so it was kind of
you met in New York.
Yeah, we met in New York.
We both went to NYU.
Met at a party. It's just a classic way to college. Like, you gonna meet someone at a party?
Yeah. Yeah, it was the best orgy I've ever been to. swinging bash.
Saw her from across the room.
Yeah. Yeah, we were both going down our respective people, and we're like, who's that person? So kind of like a discussion, because Mira's visa was coming up, and I also wanted to leave the country.
Right.
So it was like kind of the timeline worked out, and then there was a lot of discussions about making, like, I guess, docs. Or do you have any remembering of how that came about, or like how
it started? I guess we were both interested in traveling and interested in making things, because we'd been working in New York. And kind of too tired every day to actually make things. And so we were talking about traveling. And, you know, we had this equipment and we had these interests and like microfinance.
Put the two and two together.
Yeah, and we just kind of were like, well, it's more interesting to travel when you have an excuse to meet people and
and there's some type of like creative outlet for it, like with the traveling. Some type of purpose with it, even if it's just recording people on non-tables.
No, exactly. If there's any type of way to make your traveling tax deductible, that's always a...
Oh, can you guys do that?
I don't know, because I'm having to, like, discuss...
We'll discuss this later.
Yeah,
because... We don't want IRS creeping in on our podcast.
Yeah, but, like, I'm shooting stuff for, like, a B-roll company as well, and these documentaries are also, like, I guess technically part of my profession and stuff, so...
Yeah, no, you probably could write
that off. So that's interesting. But I think a lot of it was also, like, in New York, you kind of, like, see your life... kind of just like passing before your eyes and you're always still working and we're kind of just getting like sick and unhealthy or whatever. So we're just like not feeling like this is like the life I wanted to like live in a lot of ways. So then we got the tickets and came to Peru, but then it kind of became like very obvious pretty quickly, or like within the first month when we were taking language classes at Peruana for Spanish, that we're not going to be able to like move fast, or like the organizations were both not going to be able to like move fast enough, and it was not going to be very like it wasn't going to be a very liberal experience, I would say.
Yeah, you know, the organizations have a particular style that they want.
In
they
Peru, want, you're talking about?
Well, just like microfinance organizations are like banks and things like that. Yeah. So.
They want to be portrayed in a certain way, or they want a certain style. Yeah. So we wanted to be independent.
So you were meeting some...
Well, we were sending out like a lot of like emails and stuff, and we would get
getting a lot
like,
of resistance.
I would think your responses, like, but they weren't like very
curious.
Yeah, but we weren't getting very like embracing like responses, right. Except from one group that in later we actually had to like ironically like not ditch, but like kind of like
take us to fit them in.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Yeah, so what would you say?
Yeah, I mean, also, from my perspective, like, I was starting to get an interest in documentary. I started making one about a friend of mine in New York who had been hit by a subway car, and he's a dancer, and so...
How that affected him?
Yeah, it's about him...
I'm
going to
take a wild guess. a little setback. Awesome, yeah. So like a redemption story.
Exactly, yeah. And
the subway.
Yeah,
I can still dance.
Yeah.
I just
want to
dance.
Yeah.
I mean, he's getting his prosthetic and
no shit.
Totally positive, like amazing person.
Yeah. It's good. Those types of things are those types of stories, you know, like your guys' or something. They're important for other people to hear about, you know?
Yeah.
Because someone else can be like, oh, I got cancer or something horrible.
Yeah.
Damn, that guy got hit by a subway and he's back at it. So.
Yeah. Well, it's also very interesting as, I guess, in the podcast realm as well, where you just kind of know many interesting stories are about.
Dude, that's why I started it, man, because the more I talked to people, it was like, oh, you, man, I wish someone should record what you just told me. And then I was like, oh, someone should record what you just told me. And I was like, why don't I just start recording what these people are telling me?
Yeah.
Like,
that's basically how it started for us, into this series.
Seems like there's a very big wave of people now, who are kind of getting involved in the... docu story.
I think it helps spread a lot of like good collective energy, I guess you could say, like spreading it out there, like as opposed to just creating mindless garbage.
Yeah, like, for sure.
MTV. Only because you're wearing the shirt. Fuck your shirt.
Brought to you by MTV.
This podcast is sponsored by
I'm sure
the new show Toddlers and Tiaras.
Yeah, or like if it comes where we like make these documentaries and we get like a deal being like MTV like wants to put your documentaries on their show, it's like oh great, hopefully they never hear.
Hey, well, I'm wearing the shirt, so they can still sponsor me.
Mira wants to be sponsored by MTV.
Yeah,
that's very cool. It's interesting too, and I think about people like you guys, like, oh, New York sucks, like, you know, I'm gonna leave, or like how I think a lot of people, like, I do that too with where I'm from or where I go to. It's like, I don't know if it's Generation Y.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know if it's like a millennial thing. Like, you know, they say that we're like the entitled generation. And but I think we also have travel at our disposal. We have,
Very cheap.
You can book your ticket and book your hostel and do a podcast and probably order, and you can order Chinese food and then look at it. What?
Yeah.
You can do that with this? I had no idea.
It's a special feature. You have to jailbreak the phone.
Yeah, there's so many things you can do on this thing.
Yeah.
You know, I could probably push a couple buttons and a puppy would pop out.
Yeah.
Like, I have no idea.
Yeah.
That it's just so easy to do that. But I don't know if it's like, our generation that's like, especially in the U.S., it's like, I want to go travel and, like, I'm going to...
Yeah.
You know, like... and sometimes it makes me feel kind of selfish. This is kind of a little side note, but...
Yeah.
It makes me feel kind of selfish when I come here, and it's like...
Yeah.
I'm here, like, wandering around the streets, and, like, there's a bunch of poor people, and I'm I'm here, and I'm white, and I'm great.
Yeah.
And, like, you know what I mean? And, like, it's not like I don't have a ton of money, but I obviously have more than a lot of these people.
Yeah.
It almost makes me feel guilty for traveling. Which it shouldn't, because I think everyone would do that if they could.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was just
That is interesting, because so much of, I guess, like, the work we've been doing, and I just like traveling around, is there's, you see those like memes or whatever on Facebook that it's like, you know, the things you got to do, like explore the world, see this place, like expand your mind. And then I often think like, but there are so few people who can like actually like
do that. That's what I'm saying. It's like a, I don't say white, but it's definitely like a middle upper class.
Privilege.
Yeah. All those memes on Facebook and everything.
Yeah.
Like, gotta go live like, you know, be true to yourself and like do what like your passion is and stuff. That's a middle class privilege.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, exactly.
A lot of these people walking around, they can't like, oh, just do what your heart tells you to do.
Yeah.
Well, not if you have five kids and like you grew up in like, you know, super poor.
Yeah.
It's in the slums, it's a little harder.
Yeah.
Like, just follow your heart.
Yeah, it seems like a better message is like do what is best for your like circumstances or something.
Yeah, I guess do the best you can with what you got. So that's a little sidebar I was thinking of. But the farm you guys were on.
Yes.
So you guys went there. This is the guy you met in Cusco.
Yeah.
His parents.
You go sweet down when where you guys go to the farm, which is outside of Cusco.
No, it's where was the farm? I guess so. In the timeline, we left, and correct me if I'm like wrong about anything, but we left Lima after 3 weeks of Spanish class and had no real leads or whatever.
Right.
For our doc, so it's like,
We had like buy it, you know, with these like microfinance companies.
Going out on a limb.
We had to see Machu Picchu and okay, we can take a little break from work.
We take a break, and then it's funny how you took a break from it and it came right to you.
Yeah. Well, I guess we became, that's something we've learned is like, if you're very flexible and very open, there's like kind of limitless. Well, there's many possibilities.
Right. Oh yeah.
And,
for sure.
So we were just still looking into what subjects we would do. And we went to a restaurant called Shaman Vegan. Yeah. And there was this guy, there was a communal table. And one of the guys is like kind of like a tour guide or whatever. How would you describe Mount Hu?
There was the owner of the restaurant.
Right.
And he would do these other kind of like spiritual retreats or like tours. And then his friend was right next to him. And his name was Marco Antonio. And he's who we started talking to about.
Marco Antonio.
Yeah, very Peruvian.
Yes.
And so he invited us to his grandparents'
Did he have
farm.
A cape on and like a black,
yes.
you know, like eye mask?
Yeah. Absolutely. That's what everyone wears in Cusco. The common thing.
With the microfinance, I mean, all I know about it is I think I watched a documentary. There's a guy in India that's really famous. I don't remember his name.
Yeah.
Who started this with women particularly, right?
Yeah.
And
Muhammad Yunus.
Just these little micro loans. Okay, you can, like, it's $10 and they can buy the product to sew or whatever. Yunus, right?
Yeah.
Yunus, that's right. Yeah, he wrote a book.
He's from Bangladesh.
Okay, that's right. And so what are they doing in at the farm? How did the microfinance fit into this farm?
The documentary kind of changed because we were always very flexible. Like, that kind of started as our initial interest.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, we started becoming very interested in people's lives and how people make a livelihood and how they live. Because all we know is this, like, first world kind of life.
Right, right.
And this idea that you can only, like, go to school, go to college, get a job.
Get a family, start popping out those kids, yeah.
Like, that's the only way to live. And,
sure.
you know, people look at the farms and, you know, the shamans and everything, and they're just like, I don't know, they don't know how to understand it. So we're
sure, yeah, it's a very rural, like, archaic kind of like perfect farming.
Yeah.
You know, and it's very,
very
true, you know, and like a lot of stuff in the U.S. especially is like working in, you know, finance. It's all kind of, those are all just like society careers. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like farming, if the whole society collapsed, farming's not going to go anywhere.
Yeah.
And a big problem is in the U.S. as well is that like all the children of the farmers don't want to be farmers. They want
right.
to be the
yeah,
city.
I think it's like the average age is like 60-something now.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, farmers. Yeah, there's a huge push by the government, by the Department of Agriculture, to like educate young farmers
and
get all these young farmers, which I think is starting to happen because I think there's this big pushback against technology.
Oh, really?
And a lot of people now are like going back, you know, a lot of farmers markets and a lot of meditation and ayahuasca retreats. I think because... Yeah, I think there's like a direct relation between like this huge influx of technology that's come on lately.
Yeah.
I know for me too is like when like Facebook started getting big and I just felt like my mind was getting fucked. Like every day it was like distracted. I already had problems focusing and then it was Facebook and then your phone's buzzing and like, you know, you're having a conversation with someone and your phone's vibrating.
Yeah.
And it automatically takes you out of what you were talking about.
Yeah.
Like even if you didn't want it to. Yeah. And then it sits there and you're like, oh, I wonder who that was.
Yeah.
You know? And so then there's this huge comeback to like nature and ayahuasca type of retreats and meditation and stuff like that. Mindfulness is like a huge word now.
Yeah.
I think it's just in response to technology's like rise. Even though it's a really old thing, you know, it's like 2,000 years old, you know, with the, I don't know, 5,000 with like the Buddha and stuff, but now it's like, you know, quote unquote new age.
Yeah.
You know, but I think it's making this huge comeback because of that. In my opinion, that's just what I felt for myself
too. Yeah. I guess in New York also there's a, there's like a strong detachment from like your exit or like your life in a certain way where you don't really like have an active understanding of like how you fit into kind of like the cycle of just like you make things. So there's like the food that you eat.
Right. Just right. Kind of like
So that was something that I found really interesting about the idea of kind of getting a better sense of what it's actually like
to live
off of the earth. Not in like a, not in like a hippie-ish sense or whatever, but more of like an actual living sense of what
just
it
doing
means.
It, yeah.
Yeah. But, and then also in New York, I mean, you're so surrounded by, affluence and also, and also I guess the economics of like existence is always so like in your face and it's so like, I think for microfinance specifically, it was very interesting to think of like the idea of people being able to build like an economy without needing these like huge
conglomerates,
like conglomerates and like corporations and everything. So that I found interesting.
Because did it seem like it'd be really hard in New York for somebody to do that?
So,
like, the banks just kind of ruled the rule.
Yeah, that I guess that was also a thing. Is like, yeah, that we're in New York for like Occupy Wall Street, and
oh, you were,
yeah, and I guess for the financial. When was that? Like 2007 and onwards.
Yeah, 2007, 2008.
Yeah. So yeah, it was very interesting. I guess I wanted a lot of those things made me want to have like a much more. Like knowledgeable perspective of the whole situation.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so
because it's complicated.
Yeah, exactly. And there's no like right or wrong, really. I mean, it seems in life there's everything's just like this big gray.
A big gray, yeah. 50 Shades of Gray, right?
Yeah.
My favorite book.
Exactly. So yeah, it was. Yeah, but so I guess so. Right. In the farm, back to the farm.
Yeah,
so we met Marco
yeah.
Antonio, and he, so we arranged kind of ambiguously that we would get in contact with him somehow in the future about meeting up with his relatives. But then, so the first project we did not expect to be doing really, because I knew that I wanted to do like at least three short projects while here to be like, aha, we've done something.
Right.
And
look, mom and dad, I made something of myself.
Exactly. So we have friends who went and did an ayahuasca retreat or whatever.
Right.
And I had not intended to do like ayahuasca when I was coming here because I'm always very like nervous about doing drugs like abroad.
Right.
Because of the legality reasons and also just like you don't want your guard down when you're in like a strange country.
So you guys did that before the farm. Before you actually
So the timeline would be for
let's hear
projects. Yeah. It was the ayahuasca one first, and then it was the farm near Lake Titicaca, and then it was Chincho, where we started working with these cotton farmers, but then moved over to working with these Afro-Peruvians, and then that was like the final doc, and then starting to work on her and on Mira's How We Met series.
Okay. But, How We Met series, right?
Yeah.
Well, walk me through, fascinating, the ayahuasca, because I started, I don't know what, if you guys listen to other podcasts, but like, I listened to Joe Rogan and, Warrior Poet Project, which is, Aubrey Marcus, and then, what's that comedian? Duncan Trussell.
Okay.
Anyway, a lot of them do ayahuasca and they come back and talk about it, and they bring people on that have done it and stuff, and that's making kind of a big, it's kind of hitting the mainstream a little bit.
It's just about ayahuasca?
No. They talk about a bunch of stuff, but a lot of them have done it and they'll have people on that talk about it.
Yeah.
How it helped them. Oh, I saw my past. I saw my future. I saw my dead relatives. I saw the, spirit of the mosquito and talk to him.
Yeah.
Like, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, Iquitos, for your listeners that don't know, I just found this out about a week ago, is the largest city on Earth not accessible by road.
Yeah.
So you can either take a boat up, is it the Amazon from the south as well?
Yeah, you can go from Pucallpa and there's another Pucallpa, place see. Something, I don't remember. Uramaguas might be what it's called,
So you can fly in, you can take a boat, and then from there you can take boats downriver into Brazil or Colombia. That's right. Up the Amazon, the Amazon River.
Kind of east on the Amazon towards the Atlantic.
Right. So, so how the hell you didn't want to do it? You didn't want to do it. Well, how did you heard about it first?
Well, Eric's friend from high school was in Peru with his girlfriend, and they're actually going to be the first How We Met subject. I'm very excited about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, they were raving about it, and Eric's friend Alex.
Beyond raving about it. Yeah. It was like,
this is what I hear. It's like, I mean, it's obviously mind altering, but it can be life changing. Like life changing. Kind of, spiritually, change. I don't know a better word than, just, I mean, an extreme alteration of like your consciousness.
Yeah. A lot of people will say it's like the best thing they've ever done.
Yeah.
Which is pretty intense.
Yeah. So run me. So your buddy says, hey, we're doing this and it's great, and we went to this place.
Yeah.
And you guys are like, you guys talk about it?
Yeah. Well, they put it like, you have to do it. Like,
oh, really?
Like, not in a way where it's like, we'll kill you if you don't, but they're just like, you can't not do it.
Right.
You know? So that was kind of interesting. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, but still at first I was like, I didn't think I want to do this. Like, if something goes wrong, like, I don't want to be stuck in the middle of the Peruvian jungle.
Yeah, and that's deep jungle. Like, Iquitos is, like I said, not accessible by road.
Yeah.
It's no joke.
It's probably the deepest you could probably get in. Well, no, I mean, in Brazil, in the world, it's some of, like, the deepest, darkest jungle that you can, like, get into.
And so the place, you guys took a boat from Iquitos. You took a boat to a little town farther up the river, right?
Up the Nanai River,
Up the Nanai River. That sounds so badass. we flew into Iquitos.
Yeah. Well,
took a canoe up the Nanai River.
I'm a big fan of Werner Herzog. So I wanted to go to Iquitos before the ayahuasca thing because I was a big fan of A Gear of the Wrath of God.
Oh, so maybe you were meant to go to Iquitos.
Yeah, exactly.
It was all meant to be.
Yeah, so Iquitos was always kind of on the itinerary, but ayahuasca wasn't.
Right.
Because I was very interested. We were both very interested in the jungle in general.
Right.
But yeah, so it kind of like synced up well because we knew we were going to go to Iquitos at some point anyway.
Perfect.
I think, right? I mean, it's
We always wanted to check out the jungle.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's beautiful. Yeah. And so, did you research it?
So at first I was like, no. And then I started researching it and reading all these articles online. And, you know, the New York Times even talked about one ceremony people in Bushwick did in New York. And all of the experiences that the people were talking about were so beautiful. And I just kind of felt like, okay, at this time in my life, I'm 23, I have so many pods ahead of me, I don't know which direction to take necessarily. Right. It seems like a really good thing to do to...
Good timing.
Yeah, help me out. And
the shaman path.
And I'm like interested in spiritual things.
Right,
so
of course.
It seems like a very spiritual experience as well.
Right, of course.
So...
Of course.
I was kind of like, all right, I think we should do this.
So did you hit... Was there a point where you were like... Did you read one sentence that was like, okay, that's it, I'm for sure going to do it?
Well,
or just reading all the articles. You know what I mean? Sometimes you can read one thing that it's like... I don't know, like, and then it showed me this path, and it's like, oh man, I for sure got to do that. Like, that's calling my name now.
There's more trust in the shaman.
Like, when you see, like, a Skittle bag on the counter, like, okay, I need to eat that whole thing. you read one article, and you're like, I need to take ayahuasca.
Yeah, the recurring theme, and, like, what a lot of people were saying, and our friends, too, is, like, that they felt just so warm and safe, and, like, any question they had an inner voice telling them the answers.
Uh-huh.
And that seemed to be something recurring through, like, a lot of people's experiences. And I looked at forums as well.
And there are some people that have bad trips on it.
I guess we'll talk about it in, like...
Okay, I'm just going from secondhand. What I have, like, read and stuff is that a lot of people do... Like, I think they have excellent experiences, but what I've read, too, is that, I mean, just, like, life, you, like, in the midst of that really good experience, you have a bad part, and then, like, you come out of it kind of thing. I don't know. You guys tell me, obviously, what...
Yeah.
Whoever wants to start, I want to hear about what the hell you saw, what'd you feel, what'd you... How much did you throw up? Stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. I threw up a lot more.
And it tastes like shit, doesn't it?
Oh, fuck
it. Doesn't it taste like a bitter, like, battery acid? The like, just absolutely terrible?
The first time I tried it for the first ceremony, I was like, this tastes fine. Kind of tasted like kombucha, but smoky.
Smoky kombucha. Yeah. Kombucha's the gelatinous little balls, right?
Yeah, it's like fermented tea.
It's at the bottom of the like drink that you have.
It's like a tea mushroom.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it makes me want to puke just thinking about it.
Well, that's what, so the first time I was like, okay, this tastes totally fine. I'm gonna be fine with this. But after puking it, because it's such a specific
taste. It's like tequila.
I love tequila.
You gotta drink a bunch of tequila again the next day.
Yeah. Exactly. So the second ceremony, it was really difficult to like bring it to your mouth.
The first time, for whoever doesn't know, ayahuasca is, it has DMT in, DMT is in almost everything. I mean, not everything, but it's in tons and tons of plants.
Oh,
and then it's the ayahuasca vine that contains this MOA inhibitor, right? Because your stomach has enzymes that break down the active compounds of the DMT.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah, I didn't know that.
And so with the vine, you combine, there's tons of different plants in the jungle they can use that has a DMT, and that the ayahuasca vine has this inhibitor. So you drink that with it. Goes in your stomach, and that the ayahuasca vine says to the enzyme, like, hey, don't break down the DMT, basically. Oh, this MOA is an enzyme.
No wonder that they make it, that there's so many different kinds of, like, brews and bashes.
Right. The ayahuasca is always the same. That's the vine. That's so however, they can add, like, cause there's so many different plants that have, there's a lot of books on DMT, and it's like the spirit molecule. Yeah. There's a Netflix documentary, so it's a big thing on it. But it's the vine that lets it, you actually absorb, or else you have to smoke it. Like, you know, you can smoke DMT, and that gives you, like, a 15-minute explosion.
That's what the guy did in is it called Tokyo? Do you remember that movie?
Tokyo Drift? Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah. Next month. It's a very interesting turn for that for that Hollywood film. I smoke a bunch of DMT. What was that film? It's, like, an experimental film where the guy, like, dies and his spirit flies around Tokyo. I don't remember. But he smokes DMT in the beginning of the movie. But, fuck, I don't remember what we're talking about.
So you guys, is that a washer or something that's on?
I have no idea what that is. Should I just, let me, 1 second. Oh, it's out here.
Nice. Yeah. Thanks. It picks up on little stuff like that. Yeah. What do you think? So you take it. So you're there and there's the whole, it's a whole ceremony, right? Because it's a big ritual and ceremonial kind of thing. There's a shaman, and so you're in like a good, safe place, get that good set and setting going on in your head.
Yeah.
And so you drink this battery acid or smoky
kombucha.
Yeah. And then how long before you start yakking?
Well,
half an hour.
Half an hour.
Yeah. I would say my recollection is like, so, I would drink it, like, we got different size cups as well. The first time we both took the same cup size because he took our pulses, and I guess our pulses were similar.
Well, he, like, took our pulses and touched our head.
Right, and they kind of get a vibe.
So he thought we had the same energy.
Yeah. Sure. We took the same
amount. I'm down with it.
Okay. Yeah. Sure. So we took the same cup, which was, like, kind of a small soup bowl or whatever of it. So it was, like, it was fine the first time, but then the next time we took like a little cup, and then the last time Mira took a medium cup and I took a big cup. That's like what he dished out for me. But
needed some more medicine.
Yeah, exactly.
You were not
the dark side.
Yeah, he just sees this like demon over you. He just starts dumping it. He gets a Gatorade thing full of ayahuasca.
Yeah, no, he was like sweating and looking above me. All right, drink this.
You drink this.
Yeah. For me, I mean, it's different. Yeah, for everyone, but like for me, like you drink it and then it takes like at least 20 minutes to like pop in. So for the first 10 minutes, I was like, fuck, like nothing's happening. Cause you cannot also not get experiences or like experiences. So I was like, god damn it. Like I came all the way to the jungle.
Right. Yeah.
Nothing's
yeah.
happening. This is such a lame thing. but then it's like, the first thing for me is, it kind of like is described, or I can describe it as like a metallic buzz. Like, because in the jungle, it's really loud. You hear, like, all these animals and birds and stuff, and you hear, like, a wind. So you hear this, like, background noise, like, but then it kind of goes, like, for me. So it's like this electronic, like robotic, like fly or something.
Like the insect detractors, those little lights people put out in front of their porches.
Yeah, exactly. So at that point, I could start to tell. It's like, oh man, like
what's coming?
Something
like
big
you have
is coming.
A little too much of an edible.
More than that. It's just like,
okay.
Like this presence is like coming into the room.
No shit.
Did it feel like that for you? Because for me, it felt like there was like something like coming. Or like coming, like welling
from,
up, I guess.
From within or
kind of both. It was
intrinsic?
Like, it was kind of like, it was, I don't know. It's like hard to
say. Yeah, there's no words.
For me, it didn't feel like. I wasn't really scared because I trusted the shaman so much.
Right.
Like, that's if good. I was taking it by myself,
right,
I would be
sure.
freaking out. But, you know, he's like singing these beautiful songs.
He set the
songs.
Right path, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, these icaros, and he's like whistling, and he has a little shaker. And so you just feel very, or I felt very safe and trusting of him. And
perfect.
If anything went wrong,
he was putting
take
out
care
good vibes.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
so
important, yeah.
For me, I first started seeing the leaves of the hut start coming in closer to me.
Oh, wow.
And I, like, look over at him, at the shaman, who's, like, singing. And I look right next to him. I can see a tree next to him. And in the tree, I see this, like, turtle man dancing. And I'm like, that looks like a Ninja Turtle. Like, surely it's not a Ninja Turtle.
Right.
And then the whole theme of my first ceremony was childhood. And
no
I kept
shit.
Seeing things from my childhood. And... you know, the shaman said, you're cleansing a lot of things
right,
as well.
Right.
And also, like, puking, you're cleansing a lot through puking as well.
Right.
So,
physical and kind of spiritual entities kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, this whole time that you're obviously hallucinating things, but do you know still that you are, like, sitting there next to Eric?
For me...
Or are you in another realm completely and you can still hear the music of the shaman, but you, like, I mean, how does I know it's probably hard to explain, but are you in two universes at once, or are you completely in, like, the ayahuasca realm, or are you...
Yeah, for me, it was, like, it kind of feels like a dream. So, you're, like, when you're in the dream, you're, like, totally lost in that world.
Right.
And so, you know, I was in all kinds of places, and I would also take on different personas of people, you know. I would kind of, like, forget that I was... Well, I would forget that I was Mira, necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
so you lost your sense of self.
Yeah,
you lost your ego.
That's
my
ego. The main things that happens, yeah.
Right.
But you have that inner voice still. Like, that inner voice is always clear. So you're still, like, thinking and observing and looking around.
Right.
And then I would kind of, like, that dream would kind of... I'd kind of, like, touch my arm, or I'd, like, hear the song again and kind of, like, be... bring awareness to the music again.
Right.
And then I kind of... be like, oh yeah, I'm like in the room. I'm like,
yeah.
I'd see the shaman and I'd be like, oh, I'm in a bed. Like,
yeah, that's well,
really,
the shaman. What he like beats out these incantations. He has like a shaker, and so he does the shaker and does a song, and that kind of becomes like your through line through the experience. That's why like he was so helpful, because he kind of like, I guess he didn't fully explain like what he didn't really explain what happens. We just heard what everyone else was saying about it. Well, so then. You first sit in silence, but then he starts to, he'll take ayahuasca as well, and then he'll start to go like...
So he's kind of on the same, like, spiritual plane. So he's like, he's playing the music to, the reality that you're all in.
And that's one of the interesting things that comes about when we are thinking of, like, a documentary or whatever. It's like, so you're all in the hut, but you all take ayahuasca. So you're in the hut, but like you are in your, like your brains are taking over, or the spirit world or whatever is taking over, and you're like no longer like just in the hut, I think,
right.
In a lot of ways. I mean, like, would you agree? Yeah, like, and so you're kind of, and so he just begins these incantations that go like dun da dun da da dun dun da dun 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 da 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 da.
I'm tripping out already.
And he's singing a lot of words. He essentially starts to say like come tree of life, come and cleanse our bodies,
right.
And thing, and say like come mother nature, like
right.
Come all good spirits and like join us on this journey, I guess. And so he'll sing the songs, and then I mean it's a little bit different, but for me like you do begin to like lose a sense of yourself. Or at least I would say that's like, you basically become like a peripheral character in your like consciousness, because there's so many things that start to well up and you start to get like a strong wave of like visuals in your mind. You got like strong visuals as well.
Yeah, very strong visuals.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So like, you get like very strong visuals. And for me, the thing that made it so hard the first time is that the visuals became so overwhelming that it's like I couldn't focus on like what was happening. It was almost like I was having some type of schizophrenic like experience or like what right. I imagine like
you're going insane.
You thought it's like you just can't like focus your thoughts at all. Or for me, it was just like so chaotic with what I was seeing that when I try and recollect like that part of the experience when like the ayahuasca is really strong and like really hitting you with visuals, is that I can't even remember it really well because it's just so chaotic that my brain is like not even like able to remember because so fast. But then it kind of like, and that's the part where I could see like people freaking
tripping out.
That's the part when, because I've taken like mushrooms and LSD before and you kind of have that experience, but it's often like in a sense where it's like a bit control or like you feel like you can kind of like controller, like be a little bit like
on LSD or mushrooms. You're saying you can control
Or like you have a bit more of like an ability to feel like more like in control of your body. Right. But like this, because the ayahuasca like hits you so hard in your body, and you basically kind of get like drunk as well, and you're like lying down on a thing. You're like, I don't know. It's like, I mean, do you feel like you had like a like control of your body in the?
No, but it didn't scare me ever.
It didn't. No. So yeah, it wasn't like a you had like a bad trip on even on like weed. You ever smoked way too much weed or taken an edible that was just too strong? And you're just like you tripping out, like scared.
It's like that.
I've gotten that. So I mean, do you get? Does it not affect you mentally in that same way? It's more of just like a.
I feel like you have control of your mind. You just don't have control necessarily. Well, because with weed, like when you smoke too much weed, it's like I feel like I don't really have control.
Right. No, for sure. Scares me about it. Ayahuasca type
of thing. No, it's like your inner voice is always really clear, at least for me. And seeing may be crazy, but your inner voice, like you can talk to yourself, like you can calm yourself down.
So you know for sure that you're just sitting there going like, oh, this, I'm on ayahuasca.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can, I kind of like a mantra during the thing, not really like a mantra, but of sorts where it's just like, oh, whatever. Like, I'm going crazy, I'm seeing crazy shit. Whatever. I can't do anything about
it. Right. That's an excellent mindset to go in. I think you probably have to.
Yeah.
I've heard some people say when they're into a day to say like, today's a good day to die. Like just, today's like, you know, just whatever comes. Like just gotta.
Yeah.
Cause you're right. But weed, that's what scares me, Mira, is cause like when I do too much weed or I've taken an edible, buddy's like, oh, I have this cookie. Cool. I have one cookie. Did the classic thing. I've done it a couple times. I wait an hour. Nothing happens. Give me another one of those cookies. Those are weak. And they both hit you.
Yeah.
And you're right. Like, I have no control. My mind is going nuts, and I can't...
Yeah.
You know, it takes a lot of effort to stop it for, like, 2 seconds, and then it just loses it again. So, it wasn't like that, though.
No, your mind is clear. And also, I think it's important to trust the shaman.
Right,
like,
for sure.
If you have a shaman you really trust. Right. Because like, I think even with weed, even though you can't control your mind, if you had someone who was there who seemed like some kind of special figure guiding your experience, you'd feel like, okay, it's going to be okay.
It's cool. But, yeah, grandpa shaman is here.
Yeah.
Oh,
but no.
He makes me milk chocolate.
Yeah. I remember what I was going to say is, just going along to your earlier point about like how a lot of people are fascinated with it or focused on it. Now I wrote a long explanation of what we've been doing to my family and of what we've been doing in the Peru, and I included like a description of making the doc about ayahuasca, but then also a bunch of other things. But then everyone just wrote back about like the ayahuasca thing. But then also my uncle sent us a link to a CNN report on ayahuasca where they went and filmed like with night vision cameras people taking ayahuasca and like people puking and everything like that. And what we're hoping, I guess, I imagine, right, is that it's weird to like film the actual ceremony in a way, because like the actual physical process of the ceremony is like kind of very misguiding to what the actual experience is like.
Right.
Because if you just see it, you just see a guy singing and shaking a thing while a bunch of people are puking.
Especially in Western civilization, we don't know what the hell that is. To us, that's Native American nonsense.
Yeah,
exactly. It's what we've been kind of, not maybe not told, but like subconscious, like, it's just nature hippie wishy-washy like new age garbage that they're trying to talk to these spirits. I mean, it's nonsense is what we've been told.
Yeah. So, you know, so we're trying for the doc was trying to be more evocative of the actual experience. And it's also hard because, I mean, like, I don't know how one really shows that experience like in a movie, because it's very mental. So, but for it's just trying to evoke the actual experience, or not, I guess kind of just like evoke the spirit of it.
It's, I mean, our piece isn't really about, hey, this is ayahuasca, like, or try it, you know. It's kind of, it's about ayahuasca, but it's also about the shaman, and it's about the shaman's connection to the earth, and the process, and his history, because his grandfather was a shaman, too, and the grandfather's grandfather was a shaman, so.
Right, well, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
there's this beautiful, like, cultural history, so it's kind of understanding it more, less about the actual ayahuasca experience, and more about, like, you know, the shaman and the history and, like, a bigger picture of it.
Oh, and that creates the experience.
Yeah.
I mean, until the Industrial Revolution, everyone had these strong connections to nature. And now we're in, like, we happen to be in this, born in this one section of time where everyone's like, fuck nature, we're going to build everything. And, you know, and we're going to have our food, we're going to buy it from the grocery store. And it's just, you know, not that, unless you live on a farm still, there's not that much connection.
Yeah.
And so now we see these people that are connected, and it's like, what the hell are they doing?
Yeah.
They have this connection with plants. Oh, the plants spoke to them. Yeah, for sure, dude.
Yeah.
You know, but then when you think about it, you're like, well, that makes a lot more sense than like, oh, like, I'm going to name my fucking car.
Yeah.
Like, no, I have a connection with my car, but not with the plant.
Yeah. Well,
it makes a lot more sense to have a connection with a plant when you really think about it.
Like,
throughout all of our history.
What's the thing you always say about, I'm going to leave the farm to become a scream?
Oh, yeah. When I, well, ironically, when we were taking mushrooms, my friend, like, we just kept joking about, like, you know, like, fuck you, farmer dad. I'm going to the city where it's real. I'm leaving this farmer life to become a comedy writer.
Yeah, exactly.
That's kind of, like, why we were interested in doing these documentaries. So what became the theme of them was, you know, de la tierra, or, like, of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just were really interested in these people who are still very connected to the earth.
Right,
they haven't
lost it.
Yeah. So, you know, we spoke to a farmer, we spoke to a shaman, and we spoke to an Afro-Peruvian family that has a really strong connection with their history.
Okay.
And who expressed their connection with the earth through dancing and music.
Yeah.
Very cool. And so did you guys have yourselves kind of on there too? Like, oh, and then we went and, just kind of interviews, just talking to them and, like, showing the scenery, those kind of, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. For this, we haven't really, we're not really characters in the documentary.
Yeah, I usually try and avoid being
the spotlight.
On the other side.
The podcast is pretty free, right?
Yeah,
he's very good looking, in case you guys were wondering.
Exactly. The most handsome man I've ever met.
I think he has a 16-pack.
Yeah, exactly.
It's Brad Pitt with glasses.
Yeah. it's still very amorphous as well. That's what's kind of cool about documentary is like, I guess narrative as well, but like, it can still evolve, even though we've shot a lot of it. We still can look at it and be like, oh, we need these pieces, and we can still make these pieces, like get another interview or get more like material from them, like photographs and stuff, or have a narrator. So that's kind of like what made it very open to building a through line, because our through line was kind of not so solid originally. I don't even remember when we kind of made
Said, I think that's the best way to do it. I mean, like, to not have a plan is to have a plan.
Yeah.
You know, and to just be open to it and to be open to change, I think, without having too strong attachments. Like, no, I'm making this about microfinance, and that's
Exactly. It may,
you know, and then you get stuck in this, you know, rigidity that's just...
It's always good to start off with some kind of direction.
Sure.
So we're like, all right, we'll go into microfinance, but we're really open. Because if we didn't have that, if we're just like, oh, we just want to make a story about something...
For sure,
we wouldn't
have
been able to strike up the conversation with Marco Antonio saying, like, we want to talk to farmers.
Plans without attachment.
Exactly.
The ayahuasca, and then on the final day, I mean, I was I don't know, I get more nervous maybe than you do about, like, I'm really, like, kind of closed in most of the time, so, like, going up to people and being like, hey, I want to do a documentary about you is kind of against my nature.
For sure, yeah.
But, so on the last day...
I thought you guys made a good couple.
Yeah. No, it's been... That's one of the good things is Mira's very good at, like, very interpersonal.
Mm-hmm.
And
you are very friendly.
Yeah, so it kind of, like, makes it easier.
Very warm, yeah.
Yeah, especially for docs where it's just, like, we kind of have to warm to the people first. And even during the interviews, it's kind of a long process.
Sorry, not to cut you off, but I think women have more of that energy, typically.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
like motherly,
kind of like a warmth or something.
Not that one is bad, one none is bad of the other. I don't want to get a bunch of emails from feminists or something, but different.
Yeah, yeah.
But different. I think it's easier if I was approached by a girl that was really warm and stuff, and was like, "Hey, I just want to interview." Like, cool. Like, that sounds great. You know, and a guy, it's like.
I think
and a guy to a girl or a guy to a guy is just different. It's a different interaction.
Concerning how like personal and intimate our experiences were with the people, I think it was very helpful that we're like a couple, because we kind of, I guess the fact that you're seeing a couple kind of is a verification that both of these people are probably pretty cool if they like each other enough.
For sure. There's someone that puts up with them enough for this long that they're not insane.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then, we both like have different ideas and bring different things to it, which is helpful. But, so on the last day, we, did like 2 hours of interviews with the shaman, and he spoke about kind of everything, his relationship with the earth, his family, the process of making ayahuasca. And then we just shot around the jungle. And then we had that, and, we flew out of the jungle, I guess. And then, how do we come back to, and then we knew that we had to get down to Arequipa, because then we got in contact with Marco Antonio saying like, hey, we're out of the jungle. Also, I guess the timing of the jungle is weird, because we had to get to the jungle at a certain period of time. So, which is why we had to go up to the jungle from Cusco, which just means you had to go back to Lima to Iquitos. Right. Then we flew back to Lima to take a bus back down to Arequipa.
Yeah.
And we met up with Marco Antonio again, which is another like amazing bit of like happenstance, because he happened to be passing through Arequipa when we were there, met up with him, made actual arrangements with him. Is that right?
He showed us photos of where we were supposed to go. Gave us really interesting directions about how to get to
The directions are really funny. Because it's like you take a combi to a bus to this town, to this go to this brick wall that you've never
seen. Then wait till you see the house on the hill and then get out.
That's how all rural directions are. Yeah, you'll see a dog taking a dump at the corner. Take a left.
Yeah.
Throw the dog a piece of bacon.
Yeah, it's also a testament to my how much we more comfortable we become in Peru, because I keep saying this, whereas like when we flew into Lima, we were just like, holy shit, this place is so weird. And it was at midnight, so we were just like, and we had all of our shit, and we had heard like all types of stories about coming from the airport.
Right.
And so we were just like, we need to make sure we can get into this apartment so we're like, we're safe. But then when we got to Juliaca, we showed up at night, and Juliaca, I guess, is also considered like a dangerous city at nighttime. Yeah. But so we just got like put in a random, like in front of a random building on some random side street at night with everything that we had. And then we called Marco Antonio, and he's like, oh yeah, no one's there to let you in, so you're just gonna have to wait until someone shows up. And so we're just like, all right. But eventually,
nothing happened.
We're so tired. We're just like, all right, I guess we're gonna wait now.
Yeah.
Fear. Just like.
It's nice. Yeah. Yeah.
But eventually, his sister came.
His sister.
And she was. Then we. Yeah. And then that was kind of embarking on the next
adventure.
Because and that was like another group of incredibly warm, nice people.
There's a lot of them out there. Huh?
Yeah. That's kind of amazing.
Where next? So you guys are here.
Juliaca.
Yeah, so we started.
No, I'm sorry. So after this, we're in Lima right now.
Yeah.
So where are you guys going after this?
Oh, now?
Yeah, so you guys are here until when?
We're here until the 21st.
Which is Saturday. Which is 4 days away.
4 days away.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. Saturday. Okay, and then you guys head to.
To Florida for 2 days, and then to Cancun.
Oh, that's right. Cancun, you have a family kind of thing. And then you guys are coming back down?
Then we're going to California.
Okay.
And then we're going to Hawaii.
Wow.
And then we're going to Australia.
Wow.
There's a wedding in Hawaii. And we found like some airline deals that were kind of basically the same price to go directly from California to Australia. Yeah. So it was like California, Australia, or a stopover in Hawaii. And so it was almost like, as in many things with this journey, like, we knew that there was a wedding going on, and we like said to Jermaine, who's getting married, like he was like, "Oh yeah, you can come to the wedding, if you're ever in that part of the world."
Yeah, if you're in town.
So we're just like, "All right, so I guess we shall go to that part of town."
You guys are just running off of savings from like the jobs you had in New York.
Yeah,
then?
I worked exclusively for like a year and a half, like killing myself, like,
just to save up for this trip, kind of thing.
Any time that I could get like a little bit more money or extra pay, like I hated holidays because it's like fuck, because I was paid by the hour and it was like I wanted to work like 5 days a week all the time,
and that was solely for the purpose of this trip. of, I mean, of just like quitting, was, of like being able to quit so you
saving.
Can.
Yeah, it's kind of like reaching that escape velocity where I can for be sure. like, all right, I don't need to be like in New York now. I yeah, can live
I was, for sure. I was saving as well because I didn't know when my visa would end and if I was going, like, well, I knew when my visa was going to end, but I didn't know if I was going to keep working or for what sure. I was going to do. Yeah. So I just wanted to save up so I had options. Ooh,
how yeah. much longer do you, like, how much money do you have, like, you don't need to tell me the exact amount, but how much more time do you have left with the amount of money that you have?
Well, we have about $85, so...
So you guys wanted me to take you out to dinner, yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, 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 podcast for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Bring over some biscuits.
Wait, what was the question again? Sorry.
Like, how much more time can you guys spend traveling?
Well, we're going to Australia, so yeah. I need to get a job while I'm in yeah. Australia.
Technically, okay. this is yeah. the end of traveling. Okay. Like, technically.
Hawaii, California. Well, after Cancun, California.
Yeah.
Hawaii, Australia. Okay.
Yeah. Because yeah. Cancun, I guess...
Cancun yeah, is like in a resort, all inclusive.
Right, right. It's your family. Yeah. Oh, isn't that awesome when your
yeah.
family?
Oh, but places your family. After hostels and like yeah. weird sleeping on floors and stuff yeah, like that.
That's
we're so
thing.
Excited to yeah. just be like looked after.
Yeah, seriously.
Spoiled a little bit.
Yeah, well, I mean, we definitely worked on stretching the money that we saved up as
for sure.
far as possible. Yeah. Another reason why I came to South America is because like, just, it was like cheaper than living in the US. My original plan actually now that we were talking about is, way back before I met Mira was I was just going to move to somewhere in the south of the United States, like Georgia or Louisiana or something, and then just like rent like a big space and bring all my gear and then just like work on some things I like put on the back burner while working. But then that became more and more, it became more and more elaborate when mm-hmm. I met up with Mira as well.
Yeah, right.
Adventure
queen. Girls, you're always complicating stuff.
Yeah. Right? So we ended up in Juliaca and the mother of Marco Antonio said that she could come with us. So she brought us to the farm and so we took the combi to Huancane, which is like the biggest town in that area. And we took another combi to Rosa Spada and along the way was the farm. And so we hopped out at the farm and then hiked up a hill and then we were met by
damn.
The abuelos, as we call them.
The abuelos.
One's a 88-year-old man, the other one's a 90-year-old woman who seems like they've been working like every day for their entire lives, just like working the land, but they're like fucking like,
so
they're healthier than
yeah.
like,
or 88-year-olds yeah. and 90-year-olds. Right.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And so they gave us their room. We didn't realize this when they gave us the room to stay in, but it turned out to be like their room. And then they moved into another room.
Did it smell like mothballs?
What does I don't even remember what it smelled like.
I mean, it was really sweet. Like when we realized it was his room, he was like, he was in there looking for an English book from that his daughter had used to learn English in the 70s.
Yeah.
Because we were jokingly like teaching each other English and Spanish
and Aymara.
And, you know, then we realized it was his room and we were like, oh my gosh, no, like we don't want to take your room.
Right.
And he was almost in tears. And then I was almost in tears. He was just saying like, you know, no, but like we appreciate your help so much. Like yeah. this is the least we can do is like give
wow.
you a room.
Yeah. Cause it's basically him and sometimes his family comes on the weekends, but he's like plowing all the fields and carrying like literally like, 30, 40 pounds of manure on his back that's in like these...
Fertilizer.
Yeah, fertilizer. So, what did we do the first day?
I'm going to have to get the name of that. Yeah, I got the name, but yeah.
Oh, yeah, because we should put you in
contact.
Contact,
yeah, because that'd be interesting.
Yeah, so the arrangement was we were going to make the documentary, but then we were going to help him in the fields and also cook
right.
for them, because they
sure.
don't... The wife, the 90-year... The abuela... She used to cook, but then she can't really
turn 90. So
she yeah, exactly.
Like,
so
fuck cooking out
yeah,
over
yeah. yeah, exactly. So it's, so we kind of took over the cooking, which was kind of freaky because yeah. they're so old that we don't be like, oh god, we killed them.
crunch one bone. Bro.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So
and they're so like sweet. We just wanted to make sure that they actually liked the food because
right.
they would just say they'd like it no
right.
matter what.
Yeah, and then
yeah.
Yeah.
it was also weird because the kitchen was so weird that it's like. we'd have the ingredients, like, I know how to cook these things, I don't know what the fuck is happening. Like, I don't know, like, why the things that we're making are so weird and hard, like, here.
Well, it's like, we're so elevated as well. So
yeah, it's also...
I was going to say, just blame it on elevation. Yeah. Blame it on elevation, blame it on the water, blame it on the Spanish.
Oh, yeah, they had no running water, they had no bathroom. The bathroom was, like, a latrine that was, like 50 yards away or so, yeah.
Sounds like an experience.
Yeah, the well was 200 yards away. But luckily it rained each night that we were there, except for the last two nights, so there was a lot of water, like, in the farm. But, so we... Or, shall we... How would we go about working? Or when did we start working?
Yeah, we started working the first day, because the daughter, you know, that afternoon, they were all going to do the chakra, as they call it.
The chakra, yeah, that was a word that became very popular.
Chakra?
Yeah, and falta.
Chakra?
Chakra, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, actually, I still don't know the exact definition of chakra, but I do know it's working the land and planting the seeds.
Working.
Yeah,
working the fields.
It almost seemed like chakra is, like, used for, like, eight other things. So it's almost like every other word that they would say sometimes.
It's like fucking English.
Yeah.
It can kind be of used for the chakra.
A lot of fucking... Yeah. Let's go fucking fuck and then fuck that fuck.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of... So did we do that the first
day? Yeah, we did the first day.
Wow.
Because they told us, like, we would... They're like, oh, no, you guys don't have to work or anything.
Oh, yeah,
but
yeah.
But then
yeah.
We realized they were, and we were like, okay, we kind of want to come and help, too. Like, we go, we don't want to just sit here.
Yeah, we kind of wanted to prove ourselves. So, like, not just be, like... Lazy or appear lazy or anything.
Right.
Yeah. So we got our first jobs. Eric was had a bag of poop.
No. That was the first day.
That was the first day.
The second day was when I had the bag of poop because we both were given picks. Yeah. So we were just covering the ground.
Yeah. The first day was like very simple. We just had like these picks to after they. So the steps were basically. The grandfather, abuelo, would, like, open up the earth with this, like, giant tool, and then one of the daughters would, like, put in a potato, the eyes are, like...
Right.
Yeah. And then somebody else would come around and throw in, like, the fertilizer, or the, you know...
the poop.
Yeah, the sheep.
And then we would cover it with our picks.
Yeah.
And so the first day we were just covering it, and we're like, alright, this isn't too bad. It was really heavy, the pick itself. So we're like, alright, it's a good workout. And then the second day, Eric was given the task of the poop.
Yeah, really funny. Get, like, they take, it's just sheep shit or whatever, and then they burn it, I think.
Yeah, they put it on fire.
Yeah, and then you collect it from right next to the sheep pen place, and you put it in a big bag, but the bag, it's still, like, hot from, I guess, the fire and stuff, so then, you throw it on your back, and then you just, like, grab handfuls of it, and you just throw it into the hole, but you just, like, know that you're getting, like, old burnt sheep shit, like, under your nails and everything, and you're just, like, getting in your throat, and you're just like, oh, my God.
The daughter told me that, it had healed people's hands.
Really?
Because it's got, you know, antiseptic properties.
Huh.
So her son had a wart or something, and then from doing that, it just, like, fell off.
Oh, wow. So we should be sticking our hands in the more.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
there's plenty of dog shit out on these streets. Yeah, it's true. We could just go pick some of those up.
I don't know why there are not more cosmetic shit stores.
A new business opportunity, guys.
Yeah. Cover your face with shit. What about this cut on your hand that you showed?
No.
So I did the sheet. What were you doing that day?
That day I was covering.
Okay.
So, but during this whole time, you guys were, you talked to them. And
everything was in Spanish, and we were kind of...
Of course, you guys must have, improved a lot. Really? So you took three weeks of it, and then you left.
Yeah.
And I started at basic.
You started at zero.
Yeah, basically.
Vowels and shit. And by the time you left after 3 weeks, you could hold a somewhat basic, like, kind of...
Yeah, like a basic conversation for sure, and...
You were doing 6 hours a day, or...
I was doing the
morning class.
20 hours a week, so...
So more in the morning?
4 hours, okay. Yeah.
And then out there, I bet it... especially just having to do this documentary.
Yeah.
Exactly. Spanish. It was almost like, yeah, like, we have to learn it. Like, there was the real
incentive
to just...
Yeah, there was
the only way. And our roommate,
Lima,
as well, she, like, didn't speak English, or she didn't speak it a lot, so we would speak to her in Spanish.
Excellent.
And that helped, and we'd watch all the TV in Spanish.
Right.
I'd be doing Duolingo every day as well.
Duolingo, yeah. I remember you saying that the first day. Yeah, that's a good one, too, yeah. There's a lot of different ways, but yeah, it's hard to get... It's such a... Learning a new language, you can feel the neurons in your brain, like, rapid, like, it's building, hard. Like, building, the, like, a bigger part of your brain, you know?
And
I forget what part is, but...
You seem quite, like, good at it, or, like, you're very quick at learning the language.
Some people are. Some people pick up on it.
Yeah.
Some people don't. Can you pick up on it? You did school, too?
Yeah.
We both did school. I was in a different level, though, because I had done some Spanish in school. And my brother and father speak Spanish.
Oh, they do?
Which is, yeah, kind of another...
Where are they from?
Well, they're from California, but my father lived in Mexico, and my little brother lived in Spain.
Oh, okay.
So they both, like, picked it up. But I could do it too. I could speak as well. And I guess if we both do interviews in Spanish at certain points.
Yeah.
So Mira would interview, and I would interview... And then, in Spanish. Yeah. Then we both had to, like, communicate as well, but it worked out pretty well. I mean, Abuela was very hard to understand, at least for me. I, for some reason, have, like, a really hard time understanding what's being said, unless it's, like, very clear. Like, I can't talk to anyone on the phone in Spanish, because it's just, like, way too...
Old people in English are hard to understand. So
yeah, exactly.
I mean... Yeah.
So that, it was very hard to, like, no understand him. And he also, his language, Spanish was his third language, because he knew Quechua and Aymara.
Oh, I knew Quechua too?
Yeah. And then also in the jungle, the shaman, his main language was some, like, native language.
Right.
Yeah. Shachan,
Well, that's fascinating. I don't have that much space left. But a couple of things. One is, you guys need to read the book, Breaking Open the Head, by Daniel Pinchbeck, I want to say. If he listens to this, I might have slaughtered his last name. But it's all about shamans and psychedelic journeys into shamanism, and it's a fantastic book, Breaking Open the Head. Anyone listening, or you guys, you definitely would like it, especially after doing the ayahuasca. Really good. He goes into all that. He goes and does iboga and ayahuasca, and he talks about, like you said, like a lot of people think it's the plant talking to them. I'd recommend that.
Yeah.
So we can have people contact you guys and stuff, but with the ayahuasca, would you recommend it to other people? Would you recommend me to go there? Do you feel now more connected? Do you feel more disconnected? Do you feel more, kind of just apathetic towards the world? What was going through your head, especially, like, after and stuff? Was it cleansing? Was it...
What do you think?
For me, it was definitely cleansing, and I felt more good about where I was in life after doing it, I feel, because they were the things I was concentrating on while I was, on the ayahuasca, after I'd taken it. I don't know if I would recommend it. I think it's kind of a personal decision.
For sure. So answer, Mira. Very diplomatic.
Very different than mine. Like, ayahuasca for babies.
Ayahuasca for babies. Billboards.
Yeah.
Put on billboards. Ayahuasca for babies. Giving it out at Toys R Us.
Well, the shaman tried it for the first time when he was 8.
Yeah.
Really?
And hated it.
Yeah.
And then he tried it again when he was 12. And then he was like, hated it again. Then he was like, you know what? I'm kind of curious about it. Tried it again.
Really? Depends on the person, but you have come out of it more in touch with yourself.
Definitely more comfortable with certain things. Because for me, like, I had a lot of questions, like, what should I do? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But I always had this, like, beautiful voice or inner voice kind of just being like, you know, like, where you are right now is perfect.
Right.
What you're doing is perfect. And just trust your own decisions. Like, if I were to give you all the answers, that wouldn't be right.
It would spoil the fun.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you're doing the right thing. Like, you will come to these answers on your own, and it'll be perfect.
What do you think that inner voice is? Do you think that's God, or do you think that that's just everyone's soul? Or do you think
it's like everyone has an opinion? I guess I might have a different opinion. Yeah. Well, what's your opinion?
I guess... I guess there is, you know, there are these like spiritual ideas of like, there is your ego or like, sure. you know, your form. Right. And then there's like the like voice in your head that kind of recognizes, that has the awareness,
rather
than just like being the, hungry.
It's the
like,
observations and the observer, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah, I guess, so yeah. I guess like that voice, I feel, is more connected to a bigger
And that the ego universe. Has a really nifty way of just permeating your entire body and not letting that inner voice come through a lot.
Exactly.
It's like this really nasty blockade with a moat with alligator.
I would say
okay.
I would say that there's probably a lot of like different roads to a similar place. I think even just the this journey itself, because as we were saying, like our discontents about our lives in New York and everything, it's just like, just the Peru journey was very helpful. I think, any type of experience where you can kind of dissolve your ego a little bit.
For sure.
Or kind of like reform yourself is always really important. And ayahuasca is a very tangible way of doing that because you are being like hit immediately with, and so it's like a very active deconstruction of yourself. So I think that's really helpful. But I don't think you have to come to the jungle to like do it.
Oh, for sure.
Mushrooms are fine too. but then also like
you can find enlightenment walking down the street.
Yeah, meditation or just like your friends or anything.
For sure, there's certain moments that sometimes it's like, oh damn, there it is.
But then
it vanishes.
Yeah, exactly. But ayahuasca when I took it had a very strong effect on, as Mira and I were both kind of like in a zone of, I guess, exploration and kind of like asking some questions.
Sure.
And like, am I gay? Am I straight?
Does it make you nervous, Mira? Am I gay? Am I straight?
I'm gay. I actually had a, my friend has a story about another friend taking LSD and like, I'm gay.
Really?
But
no, you're not doing.
Tripping. Yeah, the thing on ayahuasca was, I guess the thing ayahuasca helped me. There was a moment where I didn't know if I had like tangible questions, but it gave me like answers that I didn't even really ask a question for, but I knew I needed in a way, which is very interesting.
Like your subconscious kind of knew that it had been wanting these things.
I guess you kind of like see the answers, even though you don't actively like see the answers in many ways. And so this, the process was very helpful because I had like kind of a bad, I had kind of like a bad 2 years or so where I wasn't like doing like a lot of things I wanted to do, and I felt that I was not like going down a way that I wanted to go.
For sure.
And so, the ayahuasca kind of like helped put it into perspective in a way, or like that experience. And, so that was, helpful. And then also, as Mira was saying, like the ayahuasca came to a point where it's just like, you know what? Like, you're a pretty okay guy. Like, don't worry so much. And that was, like, really helpful. Almost more than just, like, giving you, like, a tangible answer. Like, you should do this. It was more just, like, kind of, like, an introspective, like, calm of, like, you're okay. Like, I'm sure you'll make, like, a good decision, like, in the end.
For sure.
That was probably the most helpful part for me. It sounds, like, similar, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it's much better than giving an answer.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's confidence.
But also, it might, whatever it is, whether it's the plant entity, it's this other universe, it's another dimension, it's God, it's your soul, and it doesn't really matter. It's still giving you cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it might not even, it probably doesn't have the answer.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a complex and, like, you know, there's just such intricate forces, I feel like, at work, no matter what it is.
Yeah.
And it probably doesn't have the answer. And it's really, just telling you that, oh, there's people, you get so many worries.
In your head.
It's just like coat, like a good life you could be living. And then you're just coated with all these thoughts and worries. And
I'm also very curious how it, like, doing it influenced our perspective on, like, making the documentary. It feels that it kind of, like, also helped unlock just our exploration in terms of what we were documenting as well, because
some creativity kind of thing?
Kind of creativity, but more just a philosophy of how we were working, because as we were saying, came in like a strong idea.
For sure.
But it's more just like kind of being open to what for sure. come our way.
Yeah, I was actually, yeah, it's, I'm glad you mentioned that, Eric, because I was going to say earlier that I think it's good you guys did it, especially if you're making the documentary about ayahuasca. It's good for you to do as opposed to maybe the CNN people that just go down there and like, look at these people throwing up and the weird brown guy making these noises.
Apparently like, CNN explicitly told the reporter, like, you cannot do it. Like, yeah, she had to sign, like, a contract of saying, like, you will not
do it. And I mean, that's not, that's reporting.
Yeah.
But, like, such a third party, like, you're literally just reporting. You have to, like, get involved. So I think it's good you guys did it for the microfinance thing, just to come at it from, like, the viewpoint of this more enlightened or, like, like you said, it's more open.
Yeah.
More open, like, oh, like, you know, this happens, this happens, you know. I think, and unlocks the creativity a lot better that you can make a documentary. Anyway, so with the stuff, with the documentary, with your website, with whatever you're into, if people are interested in it, when's it coming out? When you guys think you have some finished? What's a website? Ways that they can get in contact with you and check out the stuff you guys are working on.
At the moment, well, so we're going to Australia, and I imagine that, like, at least my or basically probably our, like, full-time job, or, like, at least our job is there is going to be basically editing it. Or at least prepping, like, most of the things and getting it into, like, a state. So that'll probably be in, like, at the end of January.
We're hoping to get it done in 3 or 4 months.
Okay.
But it is a bit more of a complicated process than
Because
it's going to be, it's in Spanish. We need to transcribe it. We need to translate it.
Get all the extra materials if we need them.
But where would they?
I have a website.
Okay.
What is that? It's my name, mirajoshi.com.
So that's spelled, you might want to spell that out.
Okay. mirajoshi.com.
Like Yoshi with a J for like Mario.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mario fans.
So I'm going to keep it updated there. And we have a...
mirajoshi.com.
I guess we have
We have an email for the project, which is...
elcampo.doc, which is el.campo, C-A-M-P-O, .doc. And it means just like the countryside doc at gmail.com.
Perfect.
So that's, yeah, that's where we've been kind of like answering most of the microfinance people.
Cool. So if anyone... has any microfinance?
Well, I guess more. I guess it's not really a microfinance doc anymore.
It's more just no, a project.
If they want to get in contact with you and which you should.
Yeah,
because it sounds really interesting.
Yeah, or they can.
I'm excited.
To
see it. I'm super stoked to see it.
Yeah, it should be cool.
You guys are interesting people, and I think it'll be an interesting documentary.
Yeah,
and I'm also jealous that you got your name .com. You're a joke. Like, no one that I've ever met could ever get name.com.
Harder than, you know, for my name, I was lucky because, one, there are a million Indian people who probably have the same Mirajoshi name. And two, the commissioner for the taxi and limousine division of New York was just named Mirajoshi right before I was leaving.
So you snapped that right before?
Right before her.
Nice!
So I was getting emails from like the New York Times being like, hey, is this the same Mirajoshi who just got named this? I was like, no.
Hopefully she becomes president and then you own that still.
Yeah.
And then she'll be like, I need that. You can give me $5 million if you want that URL.
Like, screw my career. Like, I'll take $5 million.
Then you can microfinance the shit out of some
Or they
farmers.
Can say like, well, we don't have a lot of money, but we can like overthrow a small country's government and set you in as the figurehead.
That's
a good trade.
Yeah.
Perfect. Well, cool. Thanks so much for talking. Fascinating stuff.
Yeah. I'm excited.
How long do you guys think that was?
It's
an hour and 15. It goes up pretty quick, huh?
Did not feel like an hour and 15.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah, it's really fun talking.
Thanks a lot. Yeah.